They say it works when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out.
My name is Isla, and I'm an alcoholic.
We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is George S. And I want to tell you how truly delighted and honored that I am to introduce you, George. I have known George since he's been here. He is not the same person I met 18, 19 years ago. Totally not the same person. The man that you have become, what an honor to know you and to consider you a good, close friend. We talked a bit about keeping it clean, and I said, oh, let's not. Let's make it real. Come on, George.
Boy, how, man, wow. Hey, everybody, I'm George Alcoholic. Before I even get started, I got to say, I'll call you later. Maybe we can get a little date going here or something, you know, with that introduction I had there. Now, I've known for a long time, and there's a history between she and I, and I love her immensely. She's just a phenomenal member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to introduce me tonight. As I said, I'm George. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, George.
Now, when I think about that word alcoholic, I think about the definition of alcoholic. And I'm going to read something out of the big book that actually states what the definition of an alcoholic is. And it says, we alcoholics, I had to put on my reading glasses, y'all. I can't see without them. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. Lost the ability to control our drinking. Man. You know, there's nothing else that goes along with that. There's nothing that says, well, in order to qualify, you got to go through rehab about 10 times, or go through prison, or destroy your family, lose all self-respect, none of that. You know, it just says we lost our control of drinking, ability to control our drinking. Now, there's a few people in here, I'm one of them, that think I'm slick and cool enough, I can figure out a way to get around that. But let me give you a good way to compare that to. I compare that to kind of like virginity. Once you lose it, it's gone forever. So once you lose control, it's gone forever. Okay? I just wanted to say that to y'all. And I thought I would get a few more chuckles out of that virginity joke. And I thought that virginity joke was kind of cool, actually, but nobody really picked up on that one. But I thought when I told my story up here tonight, I would kind of spend less time on all the drunkalog stuff and more time on my time in recovery. As Isla pointed out, I got sober this last time on December 20th, 2002. So I'm coming up on 19 years of sobriety. I can't tell y'all how mind-blowing that even today still is to me, because I was not one of those people that grabbed a hold of this thing easily. You know, I struggled, went in and out many times before I finally got sober and have been able to stay sober for a considerable period of time to this point. I'm gonna pinpoint a couple of, kind of highlight a couple of incidents in my life. Oh, by the way, before I get started, y'all notice I'm wearing my Matt Ryan jersey tonight, right? Okay, yeah. Tomorrow's the start of training camp, y'all. I'm a huge football fan. I get crazy this time of year, man, when football season's about to roll around. So I thought I'd wear my Matt Ryan jersey tonight. I know there's some haters out there. But, you know, I kind of was thinking along the same lines of my recovery and my alcoholism like I think of this Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan. I'm hopeful. Now, my sobriety, I'm hopeful and I'm fairly confident that I'll make it through the rest of the night without a drink. Not just through the night. I think I can make it to tomorrow without a drink. I'm not quite that confident about the Atlanta Falcons right now, but I'm hopeful, okay? But that's the reason why I actually wore this jersey tonight, because tomorrow starts the beginning of training camp for the NFL. I'm so excited, really excited about it. But I'm going to start out and tell you a little bit about myself, and I'm going to highlight a couple of what I think are kind of really significant things that I think, especially looking back, I think really describe me as an alcoholic like no other way you could. I mean, it's just so blaring, that I was an alcoholic with some of these incidents that occurred in my life. And I couldn't see it at the time. You know, looking back now, I go, wow, man, was that alcohol? Was that some alcoholic stuff going on there or what? Now, I'm going to tell y'all one other thing, too, before I get started. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics and a faithful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love AA. AA has saved my ass. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, the book, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my story does include a lot of drug activity. It's my story. You know, I can't make it anything other than what it is. So I will be talking a little bit about some of that, but I just wanted to say that because I have a lot of respect for AA, you know. Like I told y'all the thing about being an alcoholic, you know. I didn't come to AA so I could say I was an alcoholic. I came to AA to try to find a place to save my ass. This was the place that I found the solution to save my ass. You know, now I've been to other fellowships, and they're all one. I mean, I've gotten a lot out of all of them. But this has kind of been the cornerstone of my recovery here. And I don't think it really matters. My personal opinion, I don't think it really matters what I did, you know, as far as what substance I used. You know, I did them all. Shit. And I'm not going to keep it clean. No, you can bet your sweet ass I'm not going to keep it clean, okay? I did all kinds of shit, you know. Drank alcohol alcoholically, did all other kind of stuff to the extreme. But AA was where I found the solution. And this is where I found the answer to my problem. So you hear a lot about that in my story. I'm from South Carolina. I was born in a small town in South Carolina called King Street, South Carolina. I know none of y'all ever heard of that place before. You got to be somewhere close to South Carolina to even know what that place is. But I'm the youngest of, my dad had three children, my mom two. So I'm the youngest of two by my mom, but my dad was married previous to my mother. I have an older sister. I have a half sister, but she didn't grow up with us. But I'm the youngest. I'm the only boy and I'm the youngest. Yeah. Oh yeah. Trouble started already from day one. But, you know, I got to tell y'all, I can't honestly say that I grew up in an alcoholic family. Now, I hear stories in here, and it's actually somewhat common a lot of times to hear stories from people that grew up, their dad or their mom or their grand uncle. Now, I did have some alcoholics in my family. Don't get me wrong. They were not immediate family members. I had an uncle that was a staunch alcoholic. I mean, he died at a very young age because I never saw him draw a sober breath. I mean, you know, he carried a pint bottle of liquor in his back pocket all the time. Every time I saw him, I was a little kid. I remember I was only us actually to be kind of scared of him because he never was sober. You know, but alcohol took him out early. You know, but there wasn't a whole lot of alcoholism in my family, and especially not in my immediate family. My dad and my mom, neither one are alcoholics. In fact, when you look at my kind of close family, if you will, my cousins, uncles, and a lot of people are deceased now. My uncle and aunts, some of them are deceased. But if I look at cousins, all of them, I'm the only one. I'm the only one that ended up here. So I say that to say that I can't even use that as a reason or an excuse as to why I ended up here or why I ended up an alcoholic or a drug addict. It just is what it is. I am who I am. You know, I ended up here because I had to find a place to get my life back. So I just wanted to say that to start off with because I think that's important to maybe, you know, point that out that, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter, I think, where you come from, you know. And I understand people do come from, and that I know that's probably got to be a horrible upbringing to grow up around that, but that wasn't my story, again. So, you know, I'm the youngest of two living, you know, under the same household, on the same roof, growing up. And y'all, I was a good smart student in school. I mean, I was making like really all A's and B's in school, and you know, had a pretty much normal childhood, if you will. And my first drink or drug or anything came in high school, when I was 16 years old. And one of those first cousins I was telling you about, we were at his house one day, and it was all the cousins were together, all the guy cousins were together. We were hanging out, you know, doing our thing, and he broke out a whole bunch of beers and some other stuff, too. The Puff Puff Give stuff. He broke that out, and he was like, come on, y'all, try this. Okay. You know, I didn't see anything. I mean, I'm a teenager. You know what I mean? I'm impressionable as a teenager, you know what I mean? And I just thought, okay, what's the big deal? We're hanging out, having a good time. And I bring that up to tell y'all that the point with all that is that I told y'all I was like a really good student and wasn't in any kind of trouble or anything like that as a kid growing up. You know, I was pretty decent kid. I mean, you know, normal kids. I mean, we all have mischievous times when we did stuff. But I mean, I was pretty much normal kid. But from that point on, it was like somebody flipped a light switch. Because I was like, in high school, I was like a member of the honors class, all the honor group or whatever it was in high school. That went from that to barely graduating. Because, you know, all I wanted to do at that point was just keep doing that. That became paramount to me. Nothing else mattered anymore. All I wanted to do was keep drinking and drugging as much as I could. And that's what I did. In fact, in my high school, they had a little, I went to Columbia High School. And we actually moved from King Street to Columbia, South Carolina, which is where I actually grew up. And I'm a Gamecock, by the way, y'all, for y'all dog fans in here. Okay, so just thought I'd get that out of the way, too. not proud of that, but it is what it is. My high school, Columbia High School, was the only school that was located in downtown. Our school was right in the heart of downtown. I'm talking about right in the heart of downtown. The school was two blocks from Main Street. I mean, it's an old school. It was an old school, historic school, and it was downtown. And right across the street from the school was a church. And there was a brick wall, one of those knee-high brick walls, you know, that was kind of like a perimeter going around the church, the yard of the church. And that was where all the druggies hung out. At lunchtime, you went across the street and sat on the brick wall and partook of whatever there was. Whoever had whatever they had, that's what we did. And that was that was what my life was like in high school at that point, after that first drink and that first hit of that drug. You know, I just wanted to hang out with the cool kids and get high and drink beer. You know, I thought that was it, man. And the funny thing is that in my family, I come from a whole long line of educators. My dad was an elementary school principal. My mom was a high school teacher. My aunt was a elementary school teacher. My other uncle was a librarian. My other uncle was part of the school board. I mean, everybody was in education. So you really didn't have a choice about what you were going to do. You're going to college. I didn't want to go to college. I really didn't want to go to college, but I really didn't have any choice. It was kind of written in stone that was what everybody, all the kids the same age went to college. So here's what I did. Now, I was lucky enough that I had started out good enough in my grades in high school that I was able to kind of maintain a good enough, and I did good on the SAT and all that stuff, you know what I mean? So I did get some offers, you know, from a couple of schools to come to them, but only one school offered me a full ride academic scholarship. And that was a small rinky-dink school up in Knoxville called Knoxville College. Nobody maybe even heard of that one either. It's a little small college called Knoxville College. But they offered me a full scholarship, full ride. Now, here's some alcoholic thinking. Here's the first incident of alcoholic thinking. I didn't choose Knoxville College because it's a good school. I'm going to go there. I mean, there was other schools I could have gone to. I could have gone to the University of South Carolina. I could have gone to some other schools that offered me, that accepted my application. They didn't offer me a scholarship, but they accepted my application. You know, I could have gone there. I chose Knoxville College because I got a free, full academic scholarship, which means my parents don't have to support me, so I don't have to answer to nothing they say. I can do what the hell I want to do. That was the thinking process when I chose Knoxville College. That was the thinking process, y'all. If that ain't some alcoholic thinking, tell me what is. And I went up there, and what did I do? Didn't go to the first class. Just hooked up with some other people like me and started drinking and partying, and next thing you know, I'm getting kicked out. So that kind of just describes kind of how my life is now going to go for a while. And it kind of went like that. I mean, you know, I came back to South Carolina, you know, just kept odd jobs from here to there, just enough to make a check on Friday so I can go out partying, you know, and blow it all by Monday. Had to go back to work on Monday so I could get another paycheck the next Friday, go out and blow it all, you know. That's how it was. It was just a vicious cycle like that. Then I ended up, I didn't end up going to college because here's another alcoholic thinking. I had this job. It was a graveyard shift job. And I didn't like this job. And I, more importantly, didn't like the guy who was my supervisor because I looked at him and thought, man, dude, you know, I'm smarter than you. I don't even know why the hell you're my supervisor anyway. You know, I should be your supervisor. And I thought, well, the only way I can get ahead of these people is to get a college degree so I can get a better job than them and be their boss. So I chose that as my motivation to go get my college degree. Now, here's the crazy thing. I don't know how to describe this other than say that, you know, I think sometimes we alcoholics and addicts can sometimes, man, it's funny how we put our mind to do something, you can't stop us. If we really put our mind to do something, if we got a reason to do something that we feel real passionate about, and I'm fired up about this, we can do stuff. I got to tell y'all, by this time, I'm in my mid to late 20s when I finally decided to go to college. And I'd already started using some other stuff, some hard stuff. And I was able to go to this college, Benedict College in Columbia, South Carolina. I was able to go there, and I graduated in 3 years going year-round, and I pretty much stopped the hard stuff. Now, I drank beer and did smoke a little bit of the puff gear, but I was able to just cut the other stuff out for 3 years and get this college degree. But then I went to Washington, D.C. The first job I got was in Washington, D.C. with the federal government, the Census Bureau. I went to work for the Census Bureau. I was a computer programmer. I got a degree in computer science, a bachelor's degree in computer science. So they offered me a job to come work for the Census Bureau. Now, I skipped one thing. I had already gotten in trouble with the law when I was 19. Got caught. Got caught with some stuff in my car. Got pulled over and got caught with some green stuff in my car. So I already got a little brush with the law already. But it was under a Youthful Offenders Act. Well, you know, it wasn't super serious. So I go to work for the Census Bureau. And when they, of course, when I fill out the application, I indicated that when they asked the part about, have you ever been had a conviction? I think I said no. and they hired me. I thought, oh, okay, that kind of slipped under the radar a little bit. But here's what I didn't know. The way they work, they hire you, but then they have a HR department that does all the background checking stuff over a period of time. I had worked for them a whole year. And they called me. My supervisor came and said, George, they need to see you. They want to see you down in Human Resources. I was like, really? I wonder what they want to see me by. So I said, okay. So I go down there, and the lady I went to talk to, she said, Mr. Smith, she said, we got a little situation here. She said, we've run the background check, and we found this stuff here. You know, and she said, now here's the good news. You can keep your job. All you have to do is verify to us that this was a charge that was a conviction under the Youthful Offenders Act, because I was 19 at the time. And there was a thing in South Carolina called the Youthful Offenders Act where it doesn't have the same severity as, like, being charged as an adult, I guess, or whatever. She said, all you got to do is verify that. You know, just get some documentation, verify that. I said, okay. But, y'all, I went back to my office, and I was steaming. Because I thought, how dare these people? Now, this is alcohol. You're going some more of this alcoholic thinking now. How dare these people? I've been working for them for a whole year. And now they want to come to me with this. Guess what I did? Huh? I quit. How dare y'all? Not to mention the fact now that I said no. I lied on the application. I said no. Okay? I mean, is that some alcoholic thinking? Jesus Christ. You know, I quit a good job to go back on the streets of Washington, D.C., which is what I did. And the cycle continued right on. So let's fast forward a little bit. I'm going to go up to I'm getting close to the first time I come to AA. This is in my 30s. And I was working jobs. I was, you know, my dad used to always tease me. He said, boy, he said, I don't know how you do it. He said, you'll lose a job or quit a job, and next week you can get another job. I'm like, yeah, I don't know how I do it, but I sure can, man. I mean, I could always just get another job. And so I was bouncing around from one computer science job to the other, computer programming job. And I got this, I don't even know how this happened, but I got this phone call or email or something from this company out in St. Louis, Missouri. It was Southwestern Bell. Big company, big corporation. And they had a position that they were interested in talking to me about, maybe hiring me for. And I thought, man, here's what I need. Because I was obviously having a lot of trouble in Columbia. You know, I was living that lifestyle, y'all. I was going to work, but my life was spiraling out of control big time. I mean, you know, and I thought, here's what I need. I need to move to a new location. That geographic cure, right? I need to move to St. Louis, man. If I get away from all these people here in Columbia, I'll be okay. And so they flew me out there. They actually flew me out there to interview me, and they made an offer to hire me, and I came back, and I was telling my dad about it. I said, Dad, I think I'm going to move to St. Louis. They got an offer for a job. He said, son, I wouldn't do that. I said, man, you crazy. I'm going. My dad was, I used to think my dad used to tell me some of the I mean, just some of the things he said was the stupidest things. And now looking back, I realized how wise he was. You know, he knew that my going out there was not going to change a thing. You know, all I'm going to do is take me with me out there. You know, but I went and started work on this job, and I started out okay, but then wasn't long before I'm in the bar every night after work going to happy hour with the guys. And the only difference is the guys go home at 9 or 10 o'clock. I close the joints. You know, I got to go to work the next morning, and I'm looking like hell the next, you know, just this whole cycle of doing that. But I hadn't been doing any of the other stuff because I didn't really know where to really get it from. So here's another alcoholic, drug addict moment, whatever you want to call it. I'm in my apartment one day, and I had the newspaper, the St. Louis Dispatch newspaper. They used to bring it to my apartment for whatever. That back then, people used newspapers. You know, yeah, we didn't have these at our fingertips like we do today. But the newspaper, and I was sitting there reading the newspaper. And on the front page of the newspaper, there was the main article on there was talking about a section of St. Louis that was riddled with drugs. That was the drug activity was out of control over there. Now, the average person will look at that and go, "Man, that's a shame, man. I wish they would clean that place up over there." But here's what the article had. It had a map on it. And do you think I read the article? I looked right at the map and went, "That's where I can go." That's another alcoholic, drug addict moment if you ever want to see one, man. You know? I was not even, my thinking was not rational about what the article I was reading. I'm looking at a map. Here's my ticket to go get what I've been wanting to get anyway. And I went straight over there and got it. Jumped in my car and went over there and got it. And that started the whole thing all over again. Now, I'm going to kind of speed up a little bit here because I want to save a little bit of time to talk about recovery. Things started getting really bad out in St. Louis, you know, and my boss, my big boss, not my immediate supervisor, my big boss called me in one day. And you know, he was real nice about it. He told me he had a daughter that was having trouble, you know, that was having trouble with alcohol or either drugs or whatever. And he's like, "I know something's going on with you, George." He said, "But I want to offer you an opportunity. You know what I mean? I know some places you can, you know, there's some places that I can refer you to that you can go get some, you know, get some help. And plus, it'll help save you. You know, it'll help save my job." You know what I'm saying? I'm like, "Okay, I'll do that just to keep my job." So I went to this 2-week outpatient program where you go like twice a week or whatever. I don't know. I can't even remember how often I went, but it was like an hour or two. You go over there, you know what I mean? You sit down, they tell you all about alcoholics and alcohol A. Oh, they tell you all this stuff. And I'm sitting there going, "Okay. You know, I'm not interested at all, but I'm going through the motions to do this so I can get the heat off, right? Get my employer off my back." So, but I did. I graduated. 2 weeks. I finished in 2 weeks. Guess what I did? I went out and celebrated. I graduated. I got my 2-week graduation certificate. I'm going out and celebrate. Nothing had changed. Absolutely nothing had changed. You know what I mean? I didn't even want to be there. So That kind of led me back to where I ended up losing that job and got in more legal trouble out there in St. Louis, man. And my mom and dad offered to bring me back home only on one condition, that I go to another rehab. This is another rehab they wanted me to go to, except this was a 28-day program. And I'm not coming by myself. Somebody's going to escort me to the plane. Somebody's going to be at the plane to pick me up. They didn't trust me for none of that. You know what I mean? And somebody's going to drive you straight to the rehab facility. It was a place called Lancaster Recovery Center in Lancaster, South Carolina. So I went there. This is probably, y'all, the first real instance I had of really feeling like I was kind of a little bit ready to do something, you know. It was the first time, I guess, I had that feeling of, you know, I got a problem. I need some help, and this may be the ticket to help me, you know. So I went through this 28-day program. Now, when it got close to 28 days, Everybody was ready to go home. Everybody's excited. You know, we completed 28 days. Everybody was talking about their parents or their spouses coming and picking them up. And my counselor took me in his office one day. He said, George, he said, we got a little problem, man. Because I had some legal stuff going on in St. Louis. He said, St. Louis County, they want you. I'm like, what does that mean? Well, somebody's going to be here to pick you up, but it's not your parents. So I left the treatment center in a Lancaster County Sheriff's car. It's just one thing after the other. You know, I got to say, though, I'll never forget that experience because I will tell you all, the sheriff that picked me up that day was one of the nicest sheriffs I've ever had experience with dealing with in any of my escapades with legal stuff. I mean, he put the handcuffs on me, and then when he got me in the car, he took them off. He said, I know. He said, I can see that you're trying to do something with your life. He said, I'm not going to do that to you. And I really appreciated that. That stuck with me to this day, you know. Anyway, that started my journey in recovery. And I started going to meetings in Columbia. And I got some time. I got almost 5 years. Now, that was only just going to meetings. And I will tell you all this. You know, going to meetings is absolutely vital, I believe, to recovery. But for this alcoholic, and I can't speak for you, but I have seen this across the board. That ain't enough for me. I need more than that. This program has much more to offer than just meetings. You know, there's sponsorship. There's step work. There's doing inventories and prayer, meditation, all that stuff. You know what I mean? That I wasn't willing to do none of that stuff, man. I go to meetings and that's it. That's good enough. So I was going to meetings, but I can tell you all, when I relapsed after that time period, it wasn't even. Have you ever heard anybody talk about the fact that you won't even think about what the drink when you're going to take the drink? It just kind of happened. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not describing it the way I want to describe it. But you'll just find the drink in your hand, and without a thought. You know, I didn't premeditate to go drink. You know, I was caught in a situation, and before I knew it, I had shots going down. You know, but I'll tell y'all, I came back to Columbia, and I didn't want to tell nobody. I went right back to the meetings, told them, you know, I'm fine, I'm good. You know, lied, no honesty, no, just total dishonesty. You know, didn't pick up another white chip, you know. And I tried to tell myself, see, this is back when I try to convince myself, maybe I'm not really an alcoholic. You know what I mean? I know I'm a drug addict, but maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You know? So I went out and tried to do some controlled drinking. And I went to this little bar one night, and I said, you know what? If I can go in there and just drink two, who the hell drinks two drinks, by the way? Okay? I see people, you see people drink two drinks. And they say, oh, there you go. Oh, you want another one? No, thank you. Two is my limit. Think I've had enough. And then the worst than that, the ones you ever see, the ones screw the cap back on the bottle. I mean, what the hell? So I said, I'm going to go out and have two drinks. And if I can do that, then I'm probably not alcoholic. I did it. I went out and see, it's back to that thing about it. If we set our mind to something, right, we can do it temporarily. It ain't going to last, but we can do it temporarily. So I had to prove to myself. So I went out and drank two drinks and went home. I'm like, yes. Knew I could do it. Knew it. Well, guess what? The next night, I'm back in that same bar, except instead of two drinks, it's six or seven drinks. And then the next night, I'm in there, and I'm teetotal drunk. And then the next night, I'm in there again, except this night, the alcohol's not working for me. I want to go get that other stuff. And it's just, you know, it's a vicious cycle. It's just a vicious cycle. I've seen this in my life so many times. So the last stint I had of a rehab was I got in some more legal trouble. But my lawyer that I had, my family had gotten this lawyer for me, and he was a family friend, and he said he arranged where I could go to this treatment center in New Jersey, a place called Alena Lodge. I don't know if any of y'all ever heard of this place. I see somebody shaking their head. Alina Lodge. It's in New Jersey in the boonies, out in the middle of nowhere. Not even close to a town nowhere. They put you out in the middle of the woods somewhere in this place. But he told me, he said, if the prosecutor said, if you go there and complete this treatment program, we'll dismiss all the charges. I'm like, that's a winning proposition right there. So I'm like, okay, well, how long do I have to be there? 90 days. I'm like, oh, man, I can do that standing on my head. I mean, I sat in jail for longer than 90 days before a few times, so I could do that. Well, what they didn't tell you was it's a minimum of 90 days. It's open-ended. You didn't find it out until you get there. It's a minimum of 90 days. And people will stay in there as long as 9, 10, 11, 12 months. I'm like, oh, my God. What have I done? What have I got myself into? But I'm stuck. I got to go through it. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done, y'all, as far as the rehab goes, because one of the things that they were really looking for before they let you go was surrender. Stop talking about when am I going home, and they left before I did. Those people came after me and left before I did. I'm like, how the hell did they leave before I did? I've been here longer than them. I'm doing stuff I'm supposed to be doing. But I was too focused on getting out instead of focusing on what I needed to focus on, which is surrender and doing the deal. So I finally graduated, and that's what brought me to Atlanta. And I stayed sober here for a little while and went back out again, y'all. There was nothing. I was about 2 years sober this last time and went back out again. And that's what brought me back in on December 20th of 2002. I had reached what I felt like was my bottom. I was on the streets of Atlanta with nowhere to go. Parents had said, we're done. No more bailing you out. No more enabling you. My parents almost killed me with enabling me. They said, we're not doing it anymore. Now, if you ever want to get help again, we will help you in any way we can, but we're not going to be putting up with your crap anymore. You know, and I was on the streets of Atlanta, y'all, homeless, nowhere to go. And I remember this very clearly, y'all, probably the lowest moment I felt like in my life when I had no money, so I couldn't drink or drug or anything. And I hadn't eaten in days, probably, and I was starving. And I was walking around in the streets of Atlanta, down over in the west side, the rough part of Atlanta, going through people's herby-curbies, looking for some food to eat, looking for anything to eat. And that was the low moment. That was probably the lowest moment in my life that I could have. Because I thought to myself at that moment, I said, George, this is not you. This is not who you are. This is not how you were raised. You didn't come from that, you know. But the fact of the matter is that I had to realize I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic and I'm a drug addict. There's no more delusion about that. Now it's time to get off your ass and go do something. And I called some people, and some people I knew that I had gotten connected with here in the 2 years that I'd been in Atlanta, and I said, man, I need some help. And I will tell you this, December 20th is also my mother's birthday. So it was that moment when my mom's birthday when I thought, man, I can't do this anymore. And they said, what are you going to do different this time, George? That was the question that was posed to me. I said, man, I will do whatever it takes. I meant that, too. I'll do whatever it takes. Now, I say that to say that that wasn't necessarily all that easy. Because there were times when, and I got a sponsor, and we started going through the steps and all that. There was a time when I felt like, man, some of the stuff he's asked me to do is stupid. This is stupid. Why is he asking me to do this stuff? You know? But I did it anyway. And now I realize it wasn't so stupid after all. You know, he was guiding me down the path that's got me on the path I'm on today, where I'm clean and sober. And you know, and I was thinking about a few things. I was thinking about, you know, we come in here and we talk about doing step work. And how many of us we talk about things? Oh, these steps, man. These steps are so hard. Oh, my God. You know, and you know what? Think about it. We all have done some of these steps before we even got here. Hell, these steps is what a lot of us what got us here in the first place. Think about the four step, for instance. How many of us sat there and took a good hard look at our life while we were out there and go, man, this ain't too good, man. I don't like this is ugly, man. I don't like who I am, man. I mean, you know, that's the four step, y'all. That's the inventory. And now think about 1, 2, and 3. I kind of call 1, 2, and 3 back in those days the morning steps. That's the steps when that's when you wake up in the morning and you're hugging that porcelain God. The one you look inside that says American Standard. That one. And you're sitting there going, oh my God, man, I can't do this anymore, man. I can't do this anymore. I'm so insane. I'm crazy, man. And God, help me. That's 1, 2, and 3, y'all. Right there. That's 1, 2, and 3. That's it. So, you know, they're not as hard as we make them to be, y'all. You know what I'm saying? They're just, you know, we've been doing them all our lives anyway. And then you get into 5. You score into 5. You know what I mean? I remember I did the 5th step the first time, and it was all, you know, there's always something that you're going to hold on to, right? There's something I won't ever tell nobody. And I didn't for a long time. And this last time through, I thought to myself, I said, you know what? And I think it says it in the book somewhere about the 5th step. That if you don't tell everything to somebody, that your chance of staying sober is probably very slim. And I thought, man, I don't want to take that chance. I don't want to go. I do not want to go back there anymore. And so I got my sponsor, and we sat down, and I told him that one thing, that one particular thing that I didn't want to tell anybody. And the crazy thing was, it wasn't a big deal. Well, I know a lot of y'all may have heard this. Now I know there's a lot of new people in here tonight too, and. The honest thing for me to say up here tonight is I know there's probably a lot of you in here that ain't gonna stick and ain't gonna make it. You know? Hell, there's probably a lot of you in here that's already made up your mind, planning already to go back out again. I hope not. But that's the reality of it. But I don't want to go back there. You know, if anybody's sitting up here and thinking they got more than one shot at this thing called life, you're a fool. You got one shot at this. You know, as a matter of fact, the cold thing about life, y'all, I've kind of come to realize, is that once life begins, the process of it getting shorter starts right then. Every unit of time, day, minute, second, once it's used up, it's gone forever. And all those units of time all just are adding up to the inevitable when it's all over. So I like my life today in recovery. I like y'all. I love y'all. I love y'all, man. I'm telling you, this is the best deal I've had in my life, period. You know, but, you know, as I pointed out in the beginning, and I'm going to pretty much wrap it up with this, as I'll point out in the beginning, you know, I did all the step work that was asked of me with my sponsor, you know, and a lot of it wasn't easy. It's not, I mean, yeah, it's work. Hell, I'm no different than nobody else. I mean, if I could find an easier, softer way, yeah, I'll take it, but there is none. It's work. If you want what we have, then you'll do what we do. Okay? And the payoff, though, is what it's all about, man. I mean, you know, I will tell y'all this, and it's not always glorious. You know, I was 7 years sober. I think that's about right. Yeah, I was 7 years sober, and I started dating someone in the program. And you know what goes along with dating. Okay? And the next thing I know, this person comes up pregnant. Now, y'all, I'm 64 years old. I have an 11-year-old daughter. I love her more than anything in this world. But I would tell you, quite honestly, she was not planned, okay? She was not somebody I sat down and went, okay, let's see now. We're going to get married. We're going to start this little family. No, that's not how it worked. It just happened. And I'm grateful for it. I mean, you know, number one, she's never seen her dad drunk or high. and I hope she never does. But that, I got married to her mom, and that marriage didn't last. And I got to tell you, I was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through, other than losing my dad. I lost my dad. My dad died when I had about 3 years sober. And that just, I mean, he died suddenly. And, you know, my dad was really, he was one of my biggest supporters. You know, I didn't realize at the time, but my dad was one of my biggest supporters, man. I mean, you know, one of the last things I remember him telling me, when I moved here to Atlanta, when I came here to Atlanta, he told me, he said, make me a promise. I said, okay. He said, promise me this is the last time. And I hesitated, y'all, for a long time because I thought, I can't make that promise. I know my history, man. I can't make that promice. That's my dad. I don't want to make a promise to him like that. But I said, okay, I promise. And when he died, I put my 3-year medallion in his casket. And I haven't had a drink. He's Dad, I know you're probably looking down. I hope you're proud of him. And I hope I don't lose it. But I haven't drank since. I want to say this, and I'm going to close with this. Y'all, it's not always a bed of roses in this program. You know what I mean? Like I said, that was one of the hardest things I had to go through. You know, one of the things was losing him and also going through that divorce. It really stung me. But you know what? I got a good life today, man. I got a daughter that loves me, and I love her immensely. You know, we have a lot of fun together. You know, she keeps me young, keeps me on my toes, you know, and I appreciate that. I like that a lot. And I got friends in this program that I love a lot, too. You know, I'm looking around this room. And in fact, I want to say one thing before I go. I see a couple of faces in here from the Zoom meeting. Susan, it's so good to see you. I love you, Susan. Susan and I have been doing Zoom meetings together through this whole pandemic. And I saw her walk in. I was like, oh, my God. Y'all, this is the coolest shit tonight to see all these people in here tonight. And Lee, too. I know Lee from Zoom as well. So thank you all for allowing me to come here and share my story with y'all tonight. And, man, if you even think you might have a problem, if you think you might be an alcoholic, man, listen to me, man. Trust me. If you've lost the control, I'll go back to that very beginning. If you've lost the ability to control your drinking or drug activity, it's like virginity. It's lost. It's gone forever. Stick and stay, okay? We love y'all. Thank you. That's all I got.
Goes out to 12-steppers all around the world, as well as to those who have gone before us and to those who may be on their way. They said work's when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out. Okay, this song is going to help you with your evolution. Only if you're sick and tired of the pollution. The steps that we take are all about solutions. They will even help you make your restitution. The steps can eliminate the negativity and at the same time accentuate the positivity. You may even comprehend the word serenity. Now we're going to take the steps to our best ability. And the very first step is about a surrender. Hey, you may even be a first-time offender. Or you may be coming back from your last bender. But welcome to the club, you still can be a member. And step two, that's a power that restores sanity. It's greater than yourself, it's not about your vanity. Don't forget about the pain that brought you calamity. Now you owe it to yourself to take responsibility. When we get to step three, it's time to make a decision. For our will and lives to undergo a revision. No longer do we have to feel a sense of division. We're on a new journey, so watch out for collision. Steps 1, 2, and 3 helps you build a foundation. But don't forget to cancel all reservations. Welcome to your new life, here's your invitation. But more will be revealed, what a revelation. Come on. We take a step to learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing. nothing we lack. Come on, we live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on, it works when you're working, so keep coming back. It's that force where you're gonna take your inventory. Now we're looking for the truth, not for fame and glory. Just put it down on paper, there's no need to worry. It won't be very long before you tell your story. It's step five, take your fourth step and share it with another. Chances are you did some harm to your sister and your brother. The same thing goes for your father and your mother. Now we're living in the light, we're not hiding undercover. Step six is how we deal with our character defects. No longer are we twisted, now we're coming correct. We're building character and we can feel the effect. Now we have a second chance, so get ready, get set. In the seventh step, we learn about humility. We recognize our shortcomings and we find stability. But we gotta keep it real and keep it in reality. That's why we take the steps to our best ability.
Come on. We take the steps to learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you work it, so keep coming back.
And step eight, we make a list of the ones we did harm to. We're cleaning up the past cause it's something we must do. It takes willingness and we suggest you follow through. What you about to do is gonna change your point of view. Now in the ninth step, it's time to mend some fences. We step up to the plate about our past offenses. If we're gonna make it right, we drop all the fences. By now we have begun to regain our senses. The tenth step is all about the application, so that we can learn to face any situation. Remember that it's not about a graduation. You know the tenth step is really a continuation. Step 11, we begin to practice meditation. It guides us through the world like a navigation. And we're not afraid to ask for the inspiration, but we gotta keep it moving, there's no hesitation. In step 12, we practice principles in all our affairs. We try to be of help, especially when we share. Now we're living consciously, we are awake and aware. So take this message to another, let them know that you care.
Come on. We take the steps to learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you work it, so keep coming back.
So there you have it, steps 1 through 12. Remember, you don't have to step alone. We step together one day at a time. And no matter what, we keep coming back. So until the next time, peace in, peace out.